Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Valley Nordic. This is Chander in Palo Alto.
This is Arne in Oslo.
So we are a few days late with this episode. Thanks for being patient, but hopefully we'll make it worth your while. And the topic is also, we are late in covering it. It's been in news and talked about a lot for at least 6 months after Facebook changed its name to Meta. So the topic we'll cover today is Metaverse. And welcome to new listeners. I think most of our listeners are just regulars. We don't get as many new, but if somebody's new, please thanks for joining. And Valley Nordic is a podcast about business, technology, and culture from two different perspectives, one from a venture capitalist, that's Arne in Oslo, and another from an entrepreneur, that's me in Silicon Valley. Okay, let's talk about Metaverse. So Arne, what is it? What is Metaverse?
Great question. I've come up with my own deeply scientific definition, and that is that Metaverse is a blob of new and semi-existing technologies and user experiences.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The blob is still, it's constantly changing shape.
Exactly. People just pile in, you know, some existing or new technologies and user experiences into the blob. And what's inside is highly personal.
Yeah. And it's all in the, or let's say most of it is not in the physical world. It's in the digital world.
It's digital, and it's about how we think we experience sort of a more, I guess, immersive internet in the future is a way to look at it.
Yeah. So how, you know, what I have read, and that's why we didn't cover it sooner, because there's so much hype and BS around it. We thought, like, enough people are covering it, so we don't have to come and add to that. But I think nobody has been able to clarify. So we thought we make an attempt at that. So generally, when people talk about Metaverse, it's a mix of multiple things. Like Arne said, it's a blob. So what's inside the blob is the technologies Arne is referring to. They are AR, that's augmented reality, which is when you overlay digital over physical reality, or yeah. And then second is VR, virtual reality, which is purely in the digital space. And then their NFTs also are in the Metaverse. And then there is, you know, creator economy, that's also comes in reference to Metaverse. That, anything else in the blob, Arne?
Yeah, I think you know, sort of traditionally some of the video gaming elements that exist would go in the Metaverse and virtual worlds. And I think, you know, people include sometimes more elements of social interaction or social media into there, and various sort of social immersive experiences. Or various, it could be, you know, shopping in 3D or whatever, right? So there could be lots of components depending on who you ask is in our blog.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and you, do you remember Second Life, Arne?
Yep.
I think we're both old now. We remember Second Life. So this is kind of like Second Life or Sony at Home, where basically you have this you know, digital environment where you have your avatar, which is your digital replica, and you can meet people like you are in a parallel world that's digital and do a lot of things that you do in the physical world, like, you know, do shopping, hang out with people, buy things, etc.
Entertainment of various sorts.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, it's still being defined. Many of the technologies are in development. Some of it is happening now. Some of it may happen later. Some of it may never happen. We don't know. But we thought we look at it from a different perspective, which both of us haven't seen in the last few months. And that's, let's separate the metaverse into two different categories. One is that requires hardware, new hardware, and one that doesn't require new hardware. So example would be, you know, VR, virtual reality, requires you to wear a headset which covers your eyes, and it's, you know, heavy on your head. So to use that part of the metaverse, you need to wear this thing on your head. Or it could be AR glasses like Google Glass, which came out 10, 12 years ago. So there's something physical you're wearing on your head or on your face. And the other part is that doesn't require you to wear some new hardware on your body. And that could be, you know, stuff that Roblox is doing or something like Second Life or Sony at Home, et cetera, et cetera. How is that distinction, Arne? Like hardware metaverse and without hardware metaverse?
Yeah, I think that is definitely one way of separating it. And I think it's interesting in separating it that way, because another way of looking at that separation is that the hardware specific, as you define it, is something that is not available to the vast majority of people today in the devices they already have access to, whereas the non-hardware actually probably has hardware. It just so happens to have to be on hardware that people have handy. The vast majority of people do have handy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the software one, I think the three main devices people would use it on is your laptop, phone, and TV, right?
Yeah, and tablets and things like that as well.
Yeah, big phone. Yeah, and the reason I think it generated a lot of hype and I think the industry and the Valley has been looking for the next big thing always. So smartphones have been with us for 15 years now. I think, well, depending on how you look at it, you can say 20 years, but Apple iPhone was launched in 2007. And since then, they kind of took off. And generally in the Valley, every 10 to 20 years, there is new platform. So this is what people's thinking has been, that this metaverse is the new thing after a smartphone, where you can build applications on and, you know, do that. That's the new wave for technology. But we'll see if that happens and when that happens. Okay, so now we can look at the state of hardware first, and then we can get into software and then apply Everett Rogers' model of adoption of innovations to see how it fits into that. That'll give us an idea of the odds or how wide and deep the adoption and fast adoption might be. How does that sound, Aaron?
Yeah, sure.
So hardware, I think that's easy. So let's do that first. So you have I remember my first experience with Quest or Oculus in 2011, I think. And it's, you know, the tech is amazing. The experience is amazing. It does fool your brain. You feel like, you know, in the roller coaster, you do feel like you're in real one. But it has remained kind of still a niche, and you have this heavy thing on your head. The experience is good, but I don't think you can have that for a very long time. So outside of gaming, I don't see many people putting that thing on your head for a very long time. There may be some niche industrial applications, you know, you're fixing something or I don't know, or I don't know, but there might be small niche applications. So, and the technology is now, has come a long way. The latest headset from Meta, Quest 2, it's $299, and it doesn't require the computer. Like, it's a self-contained device, so you don't need to be close to a computer. So technically, it's a big leap, but still, I think they've sold, what, less than 5 million? I don't remember. Do you know the number, Arne?
I don't know the number for that one. I would assume it's slightly more. I'm looking at the IDC sort of worldwide AR VR headset forecast, and it says that the total shipment of all devices, not just Oculus, was 11 million last year, and the forecast for this year is around 16 million. So it's growing rapidly, but if you look at annual shipments of 16 million. Compared to mobile phones, for example, which would be north of a billion, it's still a clearly a niche product.
Yeah,
and yeah. not ubiquitous to users around the world, and it will not be for the next 5 years. The forecast is at 50 million per year in 5 years. And, you know, we can have opinions about those numbers, but regardless of how you look at that, it's not on the trajectory it is now, it's not ubiquitous in 5 years.
Yeah. And I think I'm more curious about the daily or monthly active users, because I bought Quest 2 couple of years ago. I used it, you know, twice, and it's just sitting there. And anecdotally, that's been the experience of my friends and people I know, because we work in tech. We are curious about new devices, so we buy them and test them. And I don't see many people use it on a regular basis. So the sales number don't necessarily reflect the usage numbers.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you can argue, is that the hardware or is that the content? And, you know, you get into a chicken and egg situation, right? The production of content for this is reasonably expensive, and without enough hardware, there's not enough investment in it. And without enough content, nobody's buying it or using it, or I'm saying nobody, which is obviously the wrong statement, but like on a relative basis.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. But I also think that like the user experience and utility has not broken into the mainstream.
Yeah, you're right. And it's a complex thing, you know. I would say it might be even more complex than the smartphone was in early days. You need the, you know, the actual hardware, and then you need an operating system, and then you need app store where, and then you need developers to develop apps, and then, you know, a system like App Store, Apple App Store, to distribute the apps, and the user experience of doing things differently than what people are used to. So it's a, you know, a complicated thing to do that. And as Arne mentioned, so far, there hasn't been many successful apps that have made it. A lot of people are using it. And whatever is being used, it's mainly gaming. Do you know, or have you heard of other applications outside of gaming, Arne?
I know quite a few people who watch like Netflix on them, but...
Entertainment,
yeah.
Oh, because it, the screen is bigger, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I tried that, but then I have a headache afterwards. But maybe it's not a universal thing. Yeah. So these two things, okay, gaming and watching TV on your headset.
Yeah, and then I think there are sort of various business applications in that, you know, you look at a new building or... these sorts of things, which each of the use cases are very low volume, but possibly in totality adds up to some usage, but I think it's far below gaming.
Yeah. So let's quickly apply Rogers' model here and see what we come up with. So Everett Rogers, I think we covered in one of the previous podcasts, is the person who came up with the S-curve, which, you know, Arne and all the VCs love. They want to see adoption like an S-curve. And then he studied...
We like the first part of the S-curve, not the last one.
But by then, you have exited. So you go to the new S-curve.
Absolutely.
So he found, you know, he studied all different types of innovations that get adopted, and he came up with five attributes that all the innovations that get widely adopted have. Widely means 50, more than 50% of the addressable market. So the five attributes are relative advantage, meaning how is this new product or idea compares with what is available today. What is the relative advantage compared to that? Second is interoperability. How does it work with how things work today and how they will work in future? So both backward and forward. So not only in terms of, you know, the, let's say, technology, but also the mental model. Like, does it work with how people think about the world or they have to start thinking differently. Then third is simplicity. How simple is it to use? I think Apple, as we know, is the master of making things simple to use. But it's also the simplicity of communication, not only of use, but how easy or simple is it to communicate the idea. Fourth is trialability. How easy to try this new product or idea, the easy it is to try, the, you know, faster adoption happens. You see free trials everywhere, much easier to do in Arne's box of B2B software, SaaS. And then fifth is observability, how easy it is to observe the new product. The more observable it is, the faster the adoption. Yeah, so that's the framework we'll apply to both hardware and software and see where we land. How is that, Arne?
Sure.
So on hardware side, let's see, what is the relative advantage to what exists today? So people have, they can watch, play games on their consoles, on their phones, on their tablets, PCs. Relative advantage is it's the experience is much better and much richer. but it comes with a trade-off of it costs a lot of money. You have to buy a new device, and there's a weight you're carrying on your head in terms of a VR headset. And same thing with watching a TV show on it. So there is somewhat relative advantage with richer experience, but there's a big trade-off of cost, which you can say, okay, with time it'll go away, it'll get really cheap. But I don't know how the burden of putting this heavy thing on your head will go away. And it's kind of odd when you're at home with your family or when you're, you know, with friends, you can't see them. You're sitting together, but not very social. But it remains to be seen. So there is relative advantage, but it's limited because of the trade-off. So let's say we would score that as low. How's that, Arne?
Yeah, except from I would in some ways agree with you, but the cost argument, I'm possibly a cost insensitive consumer, but like, what is it, $229 or $299 or whatever for the Oculus headset?
Yeah, $299.
Well, yeah, the iPhone I'm carrying is probably $1,000 or something.
Yeah.
So if the value to me was high enough, the price wouldn't scare me at all, right? And the immersiveness is there, but there's something about the use cases, both in terms of user experience and sort of value. It doesn't do anything that my phone or PC does mm-hmm. that is unique to that device. And then it has these, you know, the costs of the, you know, the weight and the antisocial and intrusiveness of this of it in many ways. So I think there's something about it not cracking the, like, it doesn't have a killer app yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, so I think the iPhone argument is good, but remember when iPhone came out, you basically got it for free by signing a contract with AT&T. And then there were more applications and, you know, it evolved with time. iPhone became more and more valuable than Android came. But let's say in 2007, I think it was still a remarkable user experience in 2007, and it didn't even have 3G. at that time, but not many people would have paid $1,000 then. There was subsidy, people started using it, and then now a lot of people buy it without any subsidy. But in early days, you need to know what it is before you spend that much money.
I agree, but I think the price is not the main detractor in my view.
Yeah, and I think with time it'll go away, and if people find value, you're right, they will pay. Yeah. So we can score low at this point. The relative advantage is low. It might change, you know, something may happen, but looking at it today, the relative advantage is low.
Yeah.
Then second is interoperability. That's even, you know, more than low, because you need to buy a new device, and it's everything's new. You can't use any of the existing stuff you have. It's like, you know, with iPhone, the websites you visited were there, your songs were there, you can convert to Apple format. In this case, there are basically, you know, no interoperability with what exists today in terms of tech or your current life. You can say, yeah, I can, you know, use my current Netflix account. So yeah, there's some of it is there. There may be games that get transported to the virtual environment. So some of it might be there, but it's low. Right?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. And then next is simplicity, which is, it's not simple. Like just navigating the user interface, going, using the hands. Like my experience has mainly been with Quest. So there might be other headsets, maybe easier, but it's definitely not simple. And it's hard to describe. You know, we can't even agree on the definition of metaverse. So it's not simple to use or simple to communicate. So that is low as well.
Yeah, I would agree. That said, I think the user experience have gotten better over the last, 3-5 years or whatever to be working on it.
Yeah, it's the navigation that's hard, but the actual, let's say, when you're in it, let's say you're playing, you're doing a roller coaster, or you're in some kind of environment, that is extremely rich. Like, it's remarkable, actually. But the navigation part is not easy or simple.
Yeah.
And I think that richness is the relative advantage.
Yeah.
Okay, next is trialability. How would you try that? Like, you have to buy it or have a friend have it and then try it. And, you know, Meta doesn't have retail stores where you can play with it. Like, how would you try it? So there also it's low.
Well, I guess they do have, headsets to try at large electronics stores. Like, I haven't been to a Best Buy or similar in the US in a while, but I've seen the similar chains here have them. But yeah. still, you know, you have to go to a store, and then when the interface isn't, you know, straightforward, it's still the trialability. It's not the same as downloading an app on your app store for iOS or Android and just trying an app, right?
Yeah, you're right. And when it's at the store, it's not like Apple stores where people are trained and they can help you. It's, you know,
yeah.
If you've been to any Best Buy, like, it's like tied to some chain, and if you're tall, it can't reach your head. It's not nice. Okay, so that's low as well. Then fifth is observability. It's very isolating experience in the physical world. You don't see what's around you. Only people who observe you are the people who are in it. Like when you're playing a game, or if I just go, you know, do a roller coaster, nobody knows that. I have to go to some game or some environment where there are other people, only they can observe. So there also it's low.
Yeah, quite frankly, like if my son is playing Mario Kart or something on the TV and sits with his game pad, I can sort of understand what he's doing. You don't really understand what a person with an Oculus on their head is doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So we, you know, applied all five attributes. It scores low on all of them. So I would say the hardware part of Metaverse is the odds of it being widely adopted as it exists today and as we can foresee it existing. You know, things might change, but as we can foresee it, we don't see it being widely adopted.
I think the one company that has sort of a track record for building new hardware and changing the way they're used is Apple. You know, there were smartphones in the sense that there were phones with, you know, email and games and, you know, some sort of apps on them before the iPhone. It was just that people, except from email on the BlackBerry, people didn't use the apps. And then the iPhone came and changed everything because the user experience was changed. And it's a well-known secret that they're working on a headset of some or some AR or VR device. So I wouldn't be surprised that they're taking their time to make sure they get it right. There's obviously no guarantee that past success has any meaning for future success in this sense, but I think they're up to something that's going to change at least part of this equation. How much? I don't know.
And the rumors, you know, I have heard the price is really high, what Apple is working on. And even then, it depends what time horizon we look at, you know, is it 10 years or I think what I'm talking about is next 3 to 5 years. Beyond that, who knows? But even with Apple, let's say they come out with something great, which is $5,000 or $3,000, the problems of it being on your head will still be there. And maybe they make it so lightweight, and that may happen as technology evolves. But based on what I know of where the tech is, it's going to be hard to make it lightweight, but they can put all the compute, let's say, in Apple TV or some other box, then you can make it lightweight. There are many possibilities. So they may change the architecture. We'll see. But, you know, we can only decide or project based on what we know today. Where would you put Halo Lens from Microsoft? Is that AR or VR or both?
That's AR in my view. But AR, I mean, there's some crossover between these, right? Because like a Quest has a camera, which means that you can project the real world on the screen. And hence it becomes sort of AR-ish. Even if it's not an overlay of the physical world onto the virtual world, only through a camera lens and a screen. But but I think HoloLens is definitely known as an AR device.
You're right. I think Quest has both, because when you set up a boundary in Quest, you have you're creating a virtual boundary in the physical world. So the boundary is digital, but when you cross that, you know, it's in the physical world, you get an alarm or get notified. Okay, anything on the hardware side before we apply Roger's model to the software side?
No.
Okay. So now let's see the software side of things, where you don't have to put things on your head. And it's basically your three main screens, TV, phone, and computer. And in phone, I'm including tablets. So there, what is the relative advantage? So relative advantage there is, the experience is richer in some ways, because let's say your avatar is can have now an NFT for the shirt that you bought from Armani, and only you have it, or only 200 people have it. You can argue that, okay, it's the same thing. You can do the same thing with the hardware side, but the relative advantage gets lower because the hardware side, you know, has this need for hardware, but it's software only. So you're already playing these games or in these environments. So now you can do something that makes you unique and make you stand out. So there is value in that. Yeah. And you can also, you know, in gaming, buy capabilities which are limited, and you are the only one, or not only one of the few who has them. And you can project yourself in a certain way, which is also unique. And, you know, in physical world, we do a lot of things to make us look unique or perceived unique. You know, the car we buy, the phone cover, the dresses, we do a lot of those things. So intuitively, it kind of makes sense. If you're spending a lot of time in the digital world, you may also want to do things to make yourself stand out. So does that make sense, Arne?
Yeah, I think it depends on how you define the metaverse, and what pieces you're looking after. But part of these things are already happening, and people are willing to spend a lot of money on it. Look at skins in Fortnite or these sorts of things, which belong in the broad definition of a metaverse, and is already a big business, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Like, this is already the software side, it makes sense. And with this, what was happening already, now it's part of metaverse, because it's kind of a mix of creator economy, AR, VR. The Roblox world, would that be? You see any of that, or Fortnite? That's not AR or VR. That's just digital reality or digital world.
Virtual worlds or something, I would say. Gaming and virtual worlds.
Yeah, but that's not AR, VR. And I think you mentioned XR, which means AR or VR.
Yeah, I believe you can play. I don't know. I haven't checked out whether you can play Fortnite on a headset, but I would assume you could. But that's not the mode I've been exposed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So software only side, I think the advantage is medium to high relative advantage, and it's already happening. You know, people are buying special tools. And I think there was Gucci who did a drop somewhere or Nike did a virtual shoe drop. Do you remember, Arne? Like Nike sold virtual shoes, and they were bought like right away.
There's all sorts of virtual goods models.
Yeah, but that's... And we don't know if like actual users are buying them, or, you know, just the people who are industry people are buying them because they have a lot of ETH sitting around. But compared to hardware, I think we can both agree wholeheartedly. Compared to the hardware side, software side, the relative advantage is much higher.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So let's say that's... high, and then interoperability is also high because you're in that environment already. Like, you know, I'm playing, let's say, Fortnite, and now I have the opportunity to buy Nike shoes, which are unique. And if I have the money, then like I just have to press a button. And I'm used to buying in-game, you know, in-app purchases or big business. So I don't have to have a new mental model, or I don't have to buy a new hardware device. It's easy for me. It interoperates with how I play games today.
And so there's sort of a little bit of a sliding scale here, because some of it is just, you know, bringing new features to interfaces that you already have. Sometimes you have to install a new software, a new app, or an upgraded version of it. And sometimes, you know, like if you want to hold NFTs, you might have to deploy a digital wallet and train people in doing that. And that's a sort of a new usage paradigm with a new, you know, rather than logging in, you sort of connect your wallet and so forth. So, it's not necessarily huge differences, but some of it is easier than others.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. If it's specific NFT you're buying, then you need a wallet. Then you need to know what currency is, convert your dollars to ETH or whatever they're selling it in. So that's not backward interoperable. It requires more steps. So I would then, you know, put this interoperability as low to medium, or depending on what it is. If it requires crypto, then its interoperability is low. Like I, as you know, I worked in crypto building products. It's hard. The user experience, nobody has figured it out yet. It's still complicated. But let's say that it gets easier with time.
I think that's, you know, cracking the code on UX for crypto is like one of the main efforts in the tech world today.
And forward interoperability, once you have done that, then it's easier, right? Yep. Let's say, yeah. So there is backward interoperability is harder, but forward interoperability is easier. So how about we score it medium on interoperability, depending on the application? In some cases, it's low. In some cases, medium. But and in some cases, it's high.
Yep.
Then on the software side, simplicity of this is simplicity of use and simplicity of communication. How would you score that, Arne?
Generally high, I would say.
I think same here. You have to, maybe we should have done Metaverse with crypto in software and Metaverse without crypto in software, because they're two different answers. I think without crypto, it's high. With crypto is low, because it's still complicated and might become medium, the simplicity. Like it, you remember when we did the NFT episode, or even when NFT started, the basic concept is NFT is a token that points to your digital asset. But now how the term NFT is used, it's one and the same. When people say NFT, they're referring to the digital asset. They're not referring to the token that points to the digital asset.
Yeah, that's true. That gets to be somewhat detailed, though, I think. And I think a lot of the half of the world defines the Web3 or crypto part as very integral to metaverse, and other half of the world don't. So it gets to be a little bit complicated. That's why, you know, I kind of like talking about crypto. I like to talk about AR and VR or virtual worlds or whatever, so I know what we're talking about, not blobs. But we're in blob world today, so that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's our podcast. We are deciding. We can just separate this crypto and non-crypto. We can say, oh, crypto is not simple, and non-crypto is simple.
Relatively speaking, in software terms, for sure.
Yeah. And communication, again, non-crypto is simple. And crypto is not simple.
Yeah.
Okay. And then next is trialability. I think there it's, again, crypto, it's not easy because you have to put the wallet, convert dollars to crypto, and then have it stored as a custodian, non-custodian, like it's complicated to try. Even if it is free, it's hard to try. But if it's non-crypto, then it's really easy to try because you play that game already. Now suddenly you can buy something unique in that game that's only available to you, and you you know, you press a button to try it.
Yep.
Okay. Then next is observability. I think there it's high for both, because if you have crypto and non-crypto, because if you have something unique in that environment with a lot of people, we are talking mainly games and virtual worlds. So these are online games. So a lot of people see you, you have an avatar. Let's say Arne buys a dress that's, you know, emits fire, and nobody else can have it. Everybody will see it in that world or game. And then other people may encourage them to, you know, do something unique, regardless of, not many people will get there because of complications of crypto, but people who got there, it is observable in the virtual world.
Absolutely. I mean, now we sort of went from the headsets and sort of got to talking about crypto, which, you know, may be an important part of this. But if we go for observability, the blockchain is actually a public ledger. So if you want to look at assets in the digital world and so forth, it's actually highly observable in the crypto world. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like an extra sublayer to this.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. You know, anybody, but it's, I think here,
we're talking more about the experience of it rather than the ledger of it.
Yeah, it's like when I say observable, it's observable without effort. Like you don't have.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
What you are saying is discoverable. Like, yeah. I can go and find out, but you know, who has the time? Or maybe other people care, but it is transparent. That's a very good point and valid point. It's open, so people who want to find out can find out where I got it from. Okay, so here, let's do the summary as the software metaverse with crypto and software metaverse without crypto. So what we discussed is software metaverse with crypto has, you know, low likelihood of wide adoption at this point, and software metaverse without crypto has high probability of adoption, wide adoption at this point.
And to large extent is actually underway. So if you look at you know, even analysts are so confused about what is the metaverse that different sources from semi or fully credible analysts put the current market value of the metaverse at anything from $40 billion to $400 billion, and so that's a unusually large spread for a market definition. Which says something about the immaturity of what defining what the blob is. But if you start looking at what's going on here, clearly gaming, regardless of how you slice and dice it, is the bulk of today's metaverse.
Yep.
And that's happening, regardless of how you look at it.
What about, I think we should spend a few minutes on the creator economy that's also used a lot. Basically, the idea is as a creator of, you know, visual art, songs, anything digital, now you can sell directly to consumers. It's like D2C model. So NFTs are kind of doing that. Some of it is happening on TikTok, Instagram, but the theory is in metaverse, they can do more of that. How do you, and then again, we come to, you know, hardware metaverse or software crypto metaverse or non crypto software metaverse. Do you see it? You want to add anything on that, Arne, on creator economy?
Well, I don't know. I think I don't distinguish it as clearly in sort of the hardware and the software side of things. I think like where I take a position on this is that the whole idea of the metaverse is some sort of more digital space that's more immersive, right? And it seems to me that the more immersive and the more multidimensional it is, the more expressive you can be. And that's good for creation. Yeah. And if it has an economics layer or a commerce layer, whichever way you can look at the NFT side of things or the social engagement around this, the better it is. And so I think like as it gets more interactive, more immersive, more multidimensional, the better it is, the better platform it is to be creative, and therefore also opportunities follow. And infrastructure to do so.
Yeah. Yeah. And when we, you know, we discussed the Rogers model, it's about wide or mass adoption. These things may, you know, remain niche and may still become good businesses. Like what we are discussing is mass adoption, like smartphones. Can that happen? And what is the likelihood of that happening?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We can. And here, I hope we gave and people more clarity, and we got some more clarity on metaverse.
Yep, we're ready to dive in, but probably first without a headset.
Yes, yeah. I have the headset. So for our listeners in Nordic countries, whenever you visit and you want Palo Alto and you want to try it, just give me a ring. You can try mine because I don't use it. Yeah. Okay. Thanks everybody for joining us. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.